Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning the very last perek of Diriyamim Beis, and actually the very last perek in all of Nach. This is perek Lamed Vov, the 36th chapter, and if you're up to this point, that means to say you've done a lot of good work and you should feel very proud of yourself. Today we close Nach and we close Diriyamim Beis. Our perek consists of 23 psukim, and his parallel parasha can be found in the last two prakim of Melachim Beis, and there's obviously many references to it in Sefer Daniel and in Sefer Yirmiyahu in the 30s. The historical backdrop from our perek is very important because our perek is rather scant with a lot of the details. The idea is the following. The kingdom of Assyria, the empire of Assyria, has controlled the Middle East for about 100 years. During their reign, they were able to exile the northern kingdoms. However, the times of Yoshiyahu HaMelech brought about a crumbling of the Assyrian Empire. And as it crumbles, Yoshiyahu HaMelech is able to take back much of the land and claim bigger territory around him. Therefore, he becomes a territorial power until he is actually killed by Pharaoh Necho. It is in that political freedom and geopolitical freedom that he is able to create the spiritual revolution that he does. At the same time, Egypt is also eyeing the same vacuum of power and feels that his opportunity to gain regional superiority, and that's why Egypt is aligning itself with Assyria against Babylon, which is the rising power at an alarming rate. That's the context in which we hear about the last 22 years of the kingdom of Yehuda, which are to be found in our perek between four kings. The names of those four kings are Yehoiachaz, Yoyakim, Yechoniah, and Zedekiah. How does this work? Let's take a look. First four psukim are about Yehoiachaz, the son of Yoshiel. Remember, Yoshiel was killed by the Egyptians. And in his place, the Am Haaretz, the people of the land, place Yehoiachaz, the son of Yoshiyahu, as the king in the place of his father. He was 23 years old, and he ruled for some total of 3 months. However, the king of Egypt returned and punished the land financially and removed Yehoiachaz from being the king. Instead, they placed Eliakim, his brother, another son of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, the king of Yerushalayim, and they changed his name to Yehoiakim as well. Now, first, a few basic things over here is, why did the people put Yehoiachaz on the throne in the first place? It seems that they saw that he was a continuation of the expansionist ideas of his father, Yoshiyahu. The people felt Yoshiyahu was a strong king politically and spiritually, and they felt that Yehoiachaz had the same tendencies, which is interesting because Yehoiachaz is actually not the older of the sons of Yoshiyahu. He is the second. The people overlooked the older son, who they felt was not worthy of the throne, whose name was Eliakim, and they put Yehoiachaz. Why did Pharaoh remove him? He felt that Yehoiakim would be more of a yes man to him. It could even be that Yehoiakim vied to use Egypt as a possibility of getting himself on the throne in exchange for being their ally. Remember, Egypt is eager for allies and eager for control in the Middle East against the rising power of Babylon. And therefore, after the Battle of Karkemish, where he beats back the forces in the north, he removes Yehoiachaz and replaces Yehoiakim, the rightful Bechor, on the throne as well. Rashi points out that the name change from Eliakim to Yehoiakim, again, is an expression of the power that Egypt has over Israel at this point in time. It's like Pharaoh naming Yosef Tzafnas Paneach to, so to speak, say, I'm in charge of you. I'm giving you your identity. We now hear from Psukim Hei to Ches about Yehoiakim. So he becomes king at 25 years old. That means he was 2 years older than his brother. And he rules for 11 years. However, he is labeled as a bad king. And in his time, we hear about how he's taken to Babel in chains. And Nebuchadnezzar takes from him many of the special chalices, many of the clay kodesh, or the Beis Hamikdash, with him as well. And it references us to other places in Tanakh where we hear about the evil of Yehoiakim. Yehoiakim is seen as the primary adversary of Yirmiyahu. Anavi, he is the one who openly disregards Yirmiyahu in the most clear of ways. Why is he taken to Babylon? So if for 4 years, at the beginning of Yehoiakim's reign, Egypt is the regional power. However, then Nebuchadnezzar beats back Egypt in Karkemish, another battle at Karkemish, at which time they take all the what they call Bnei Ches, the lands of the Trans River, the Trans Euphrates, which includes Israel, Syria and Israel, from Egypt. And that's when, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, that is when Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim, and he takes Jehoiakim to Babel, and at which point Jehoiakim says he will be enslaved, he agrees to pay Babylonian taxes. At this point in time, he's returned to Israel, and for 3 years there is peace and quiet. However, then after those 3 years, he rebels again, leading to a cessation of paying taxes and leading to a three-year war ending with a siege in Jerusalem in which Jehoiakim is taken captive and is killed by the Babylonians. And in his stead, his son, Jehoiachin, who is now the grandson of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, is placed as the king. It's important to notice that at this point in time, Yirmiyahu is begging the prophets. And this is when Yirmiyahu actually wrote Eicha, the first two chapters of Eicha, as it's clear in Sefer Yirmiyahu, and he gave it already to Jehoiakim, and Jehoiakim burnt it. He wasn't interested in hearing about what was about to happen. Yirmiyahu was trying to convince them, don't fight with Babylon, submit to them, and it will be a lesser prophecy. It will only be 70 years, but they refused to do this. Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah did not listen to Yirmiyahu HaMelech, Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Then we hear about the son of Jehoiakim, his name is Jehoiachin, and he features in Sukkim Test to Yud. In this section, we know that he's 8 years old when he becomes a king, and he only rules for 3 months and 10 days, when then, you know, Nebuchadnezzar comes back and takes him captive and brings him back to Babel and places Zedekiah, the brother of Jehoiakim, the brother of Joachaz on the throne. This is the third son of Yoshua Melech, the uncle of the king Jehoiachin. So how old was he? In our version, it says 8 years old when he was the king. In Melachim, it says he was 18. So the Rebbe Farshim explained that he was, in fact, 8 at the time that his father put him on the throne, 10 years prior to the end of his reign. His father, Jehoiakim, did not want it to be that he, the older son, would be replaced or supplanted by a younger brother like he was. So he made his oldest son already a king at the age of 8. So at 18, late 10 years later, he was ready to go. Why was he exiled? So Josephus explains, also based on a Midrash in Vayikra Rabba, Perek Yotes, that Nebuchadnezzar first placed Jehoiakim on the throne, believing that he would be in submission to him. But after he got back, his servants said to him, wait a second, you put the son of the king on the throne, he's going to try to avenge his father. So then Nebuchadnezzar feared that, came back and took Jehoiakim to exile. It's interesting that Jehoiakim ultimately is going to be the one who lives in Babylon, lives in exile, but is going to be the propagator of Zerubbabel, who's going to be the return of the king from the Davidic rule, is going to come from Jehoiakim, interestingly enough, not from Zedekiah. And that's what we have over here. At this point in time, it's also worthwhile noting that as is described in Sefer Melachim, 10,000 of the greatest of Yerushalayim are also exiled with Jehoiakim, including Yechezkel and the forebears of Mordechai as well, are exiled in this stage of exile. This is really the second stage of exile. The first one is in the days of Jehoiakim, now the times of Jehoiakim, and now we have 11 more years of Zedekiah HaMelech. So we have from Psukim Yud Aleph to Yud Tes, to Yud Gimel, in which we hear about Zedekiah. He's only 21 years old when he enters the rule. So he was a very young boy when his father was killed, and he rules only for 11 years himself. And unfortunately, he does bad in the eyes of Hashem. He does not humble himself in front of the words of Yirmiyahu, and he does not listen to his promise to the king of Babylon. So who is Zedekiah? So he is the third son of Yoshiyahu Melech. This is the third of the sons to become king. And as the Gemara in Horios points out, that his name, this is on Daf Yud Beis and Beis, that his name was really Shalom. But Nebuchadnezzar changed his name to Zedekiah, again another power play. Why Zedekiah? Because he used his name as a oath that he would not rebel, by the name of his God, that he would not rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. So when he did rebel, Nebuchadnezzar felt that it was a transgression of his very own word as well. What was his sin? Rashi pointed out that he was not an evil person. He just didn't listen to the advice of Yirmiyahu HaNavi to submit himself, and he reneged on his shvua to Nebuchadnezzar. It's interesting to notice that if you look at Sefer Yirmiyahu, it seems clear that he could not get a full control of the noblemen of Yerushalayim. There are many people who are very comfortable in Yerushalayim. They've been very successful under the changing of rules. They made a good buck in political instability, and they were not willing to let go of their hold, and Zedekiah was not able to rein them in. These are the people who ultimately put Yirmiyahu in a prison and tried to starve him to death. Terrible people that lived in Yerushalayim at the time. And these are ruling the roost. Finally, we hear about the punishment from Sukkim Yudalit to Chav Aleph. And in this, the Tanakh does what's called essentially a Tziduk Hadin. It ratifies the justice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, explaining that the people of Israel acted like the nations around them. They didn't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem sent them messengers because he cared about them and he cared about his house, and they mocked them. They mocked all the people who tried to tell him to do the right thing. They took it personally rather than taking it personally. And ultimately, because of this, Hashem sent in the army of the customs, the Chaldeans, which are the Babylonians, who killed not only their army, but even their children and the young men and young women, their elders, which is, as Rashi points out, an act of extreme cruelty. That was part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wrath, which was being unleashed over here. And everything was pillaged and destroyed. Their coffers were completely empty. The base of Medrash was destroyed. The walls were broken. And the rest of the nation of Israel were taken into exile. This is a description of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash from Sefer Devar Hayomim's point of view. Ezra adds in, it's in order to fill out the 70 years that Yirmiyahu had talked about of the days of the Shemitah that Bnei Yisrael did not sit for. What does that mean? So the different ways of calculating this, Ralbag says that there were 15 years of the first part of the exile that we're talking about, referring to when it comes to Nebuchadnezzar, and that was when Babylon, until Babylon fell, and that's 325 years worth of missed Shemitahs for Israel. Israel was not careful. Rashi has a more complex explanation in Parashas Luchakoyasai and here in Nach, how to work out all the missed Shemitahs all the way earlier back, even till times of Shoftim. But the point is that there is a contract with the land. The land itself is a living, breathing entity, and because it was rejected and Bnei Israel did not treat it respectfully, it did not treat them respectfully and needed to have some degree of correction in order to be able to welcome them back. And finally, the last two psukim over here of Divrei Hayomim Beis, the last two were psukim of Tanakh, actually the first two psukim of Sefer Ezra. And that is that in the first year of Koresh, that's Cyrus the Great, the king of Persia, he was inspired by God, as Yirmiyahu had said would happen, and he sent around an edict allowing the nations of Israel to go back to Yerushalayim to build their temple. Why are these psukim here at the end of Divrei Hayomim? Rashi explains, and many Mefarshim explain as well, that really Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah is a continuation of Sefer Divrei Hayomim Beis. After all, Sefer Divrei Hayomim is written by Ezra, and the whole point of it is to connect the past and the dynasty of Malchus Yisrael, Malchus Yehuda, to the present of the rejuvenation of Shivat Zion, which is when Ezra is writing. And therefore, this is exactly the point of the whole book of Divrei Hayomim, is to read history with the glasses of awareness that every act, even the complex acts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lead ultimately to a geula, to redemption, and seeing oneself as part of the historical process of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's master plan in the world. And that is why we learn Nach. That is why we learn Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, because it contextualizes who we are, why we are, and where we're going. With this, we close. Be'ezras Hashem, we start again as we live it in our own lives. Have a wonderful, meaningful, and joyful day.